Skies, MK2 Romeo, India, Whiskey. My name is Dick, and as usual, we begin the TechNet on Sunday night. It's a gathering of curious radio amateurs who want to know more about how wireless equipment works, ham radio equipment in particular, and other subjects of a science interest. Any subject of interest to a radio amateur is appropriate for the TechNet. Tonight, we're going to be running an experiment with the Rosh Hashanah holiday. Will there be anybody else to, anybody left to sign into the TechNet? We're still going to find out. We got one check-in so far, Joe. And as you guys know, the main purpose is education. The first section is where people sign in with their, because they've got a question or a comment for the net. They sign in and give us their call letters, their name, and the word yes. Roy AC2GS will not be on tonight because of the holiday. And Paul WS2N of the Space Report will probably have an extended version of the Space Report tonight. I'm also going to throw in a puzzle or two during the time that Roy would have normally talked. So, do we have anyone left out there to sign into the TechNet? Give me your call letters and name right now, K2RIW listening.
Alrighty, why not? KD2, AMZ Mike, and I do have a comment, not exactly a question.
Very fine, Mike. Anyone else? We got Joe and Mike so far. Anyone else to check in with a question or a comment? Give me a call letters and name right now.
N2XJN.
Okay. That nameless person was probably West N2XJN. Anyone else to check in with a question or a comment? Give me a call letters and name right now.
I heard a noisy signal on the mic when he unkeyed. There might be somebody else out there on the fringe.
Okay, so far we've got Joe, Mike, and Wes checking in. Anyone else to check into the TechNet? Give me a call letters and name right now. One last call. Anyone else to check into the TechNet? Give me a call letters and name.
W2OSR, Dick, just to let you know you're not out there by yourself.
Mr. OSR, thank you. So there are people around tonight. Alrighty. Joe signed in earlier, and maybe we'll have a further discussion on the peculiarities of a spectrum analyzer. W2RYY, K2RIW. Go ahead, Joe.
Alright, I'd like to ask a question first. The question is actually it's a simple one. It requires two different words, horizontal or vertical. And that's all I'm interested in for this particular question. You don't have to go into the discussion about it whatsoever. But I have comments about the spectrum analyzer discussion from a couple of weeks ago, and I also have quite a bit of information I recorded off a couple of web pages on smart meters. And I'm sure you want some meat and potatoes answers on these things. So, you know, there you go. The question is this. You may not know about the subject. Maybe you do. Radiax cable, which is a cable called leaky RF coax cable. It's used in buildings, other various applications from time to time. Where the cable is mounted horizontally, what is the polarization wave out of that cable? Is it horizontal or considered vertical polarization? Back to you.
Let me first ask you, Joe, you may be more familiar with this than I am. The slots that they draw, that they cut into the outer conductor of the cable, are those slots parallel to the long axis of the cable or perpendicular, or are they slanted? How are the slots that are cut into the cable actually oriented, Joe? Go ahead.
I'm trying to recall. I haven't seen that kind of cable in a long time. I'll see some this week. I believe the slots are cut with the axis of the cable. So the slots are horizontal if the cable is horizontal, and they make them in two versions. Slots cut on one side and slots cut also 180 degrees around the other side of the cable too, so radius both sides of the cable. So if that's the case, what do you think the polarization coming out of the cable is?
said is right. I'm pretty sure I know what the polarization is, Joe. A slot antenna versus a real dipole antenna. There's a strong similarity between the two. They have almost the identical gain, pattern, and whatever, except everything's reversed. A slot antenna is where you take a large sheet of metal, which is conductive, goes to infinity in all directions, and you cut a slot where the dipole would have been. So you get the exact same characteristics of the dipole. What used to be a conductor is now an insulator. What used to be an insulator is now a conductor. With one exception, the polarity is reversed. A slot antenna, a horizontal slot, radiates a vertically polarized signal. If you could see the actual signal across the slot, the middle of the slot, the upper horizontal slot, the middle of the upper half has got at one instant of time a positive voltage on it, and the lower portion's got a negative voltage on it. So it's a vertically polarized signal that comes out of a horizontal slot. Now, once that signal comes out of the cable and it bounces off of all the stuff that's nearby, is the polarization maintained? Not very well. But if you could suspend that radiax cable in free space or in an anechoic chamber, you made a careful measurement, you would see what comes out of it is purely vertically polarized. So you only get the voltage across the slot. You don't get the voltage parallel to the slot, if you know what I mean, Joe. To B2RYY, K2RYW. It's a piece of waveguide almost beyond cutoff.
Okay, so what, from what you're saying, it sounds like the way the wave being emitted is 90 degrees away from what you think it's supposed to be. The cable's horizontal, the wave coming out of it would be polarized. If the cable was running vertical in the building, the signal coming out of the cable would be horizontally polarized, correct?
You've got it, Jim.
Okay, that takes care of that. Number two, I don't know if you want to discuss this or not. You made a comment about my spectrum analyzer and how it measures, and I disagree with what you said, and I'll tell you why. Two reasons. I can put the thing on 1 meg per division, and I can look at a span of 8 megs all at once, unless I go to like 5, 10, or full on the analyzer. And it is flat in its response. And the reason I know this, for two reasons. Number one, if I look at a television carrier off of the air, what I see is essentially a flat picture of just noise that you would call the top of Bart's head. That's what it sort of looks like. If I put the analyzer to like 0.5 meg per division, per centimeter, it still maintains its flatness. And I've also checked this by using another device that emits RF energy in a type of spread spectrum type of pattern called a SightMaster. If you actually hook that to the antenna input, with using some attenuation, of course, because it puts out a fairly high signal, you will see this thing put out energy all over the spectrum. And when it does that, every spike it puts out is at the same vertical level. So that sort of makes me think that what you said I don't agree with, as far as the spectrum analyzer having a not flat response, okay? Number two, along the same subject of me looking at noise, what I did, some more measurements of me reset my radio. I made some other interesting observations. Not only do I see the noise impulse at certain groups, like maybe two or three or four, and very tightly grouped together each other, and they don't separate as you change the dispersion, horizontal dispersion. They always say they're always the same amount of space between them. That's probably because going to the discussion you said about the thing picking up random impulse noise. But what I did see is if I actually rotate the television antenna from, say, 0 degrees to 90 degrees, I know this stuff is coming in at an azimuth of about 45 to 50 degrees, give or take, I actually see those signals go up and down like a sine wave, like a sine wave is moving, and you're looking at a side view of that sine wave actually moving like you'd have across an oscilloscope. Third thing I did, I took a small radio tuned around 5398. that I could walk portable near where I think this noise was coming from. And I experienced something very similar. The noise impulses I heard, even with the radio having an internal attenuator turned on to lessen the sensitivity, I got the same effect. As I was walking down the sidewalk, the noise impulse that I was picking up when I was holding the radio horizontally polarized, the noise impulse would come and go like I was walking through standing waves. Can you explain what kind of phenomena I'm encountering? Back to you.
Okay, let's back up a little bit. If I was using a ordinary spectrum analyzer, not the one that's so restricted that's inside of your SiteMaster or your service monitor, if I was using an ordinary spectrum analyzer where I had complete control of sweep speed, resolution bandwidth, sweep width, and so on, and knowing that the noise is coming from spikes of breakdown, in other words, each time whatever is arcing over in that power line that's near you, assuming it's a power line arcing over, the actual rise time of that spike probably is nanoseconds, well under a microsecond. And so if I was using a broadband spectrum analyzer sweeping from, let's say, essentially 0 to 1 gigahertz, and I'm using a 1 megahertz resolution bandwidth, and I'm setting the spectrum analyzer in the peak hold mode, and I let it sweep a whole lot of time, I would see the screen filled up with signals, like Bart's head, all the way out to a couple hundred megacycles, then it would start falling off at around 6 dB per octave. Each individual spike, because of its extremely brief rise time, is making a burst of noise that goes across the whole Don spectrum. It's not favoring any one frequency. So no matter where the spectrum analyzer is tuned at that instant, it picks up that spike. And in the peak hold mode, you'll eventually fill up the screen at a nearly constant amplitude. That's what's happening in the frequency domain when you have a non-synchronized sweep across a very broad bandwidth with a broad resolution bandwidth, so you can pick up the rise time of each of those pulses. Let me drop. Now if you start synchronizing the sweep with the 60 cycle line, you'll find that you're now using what you think is the horizontal sweep and displaying megacycles on the screen. It's now becoming a time domain function. In other words, because the spikes are occurring at some particular portion of the 60 cycle waveform, maybe the leading edge and the trailing edge, so to speak, on both the positive side and the negative side, it's occurring at very specific times. And now with a synchronized sweep of your spectrum analyzer locked to the line, you'll find that there are certain locations across the screen where the spikes appear, and it doesn't appear in other places. In other words, you think you've got a frequency domain spectrum analyzer, but it's giving you a partial time domain response. That's part of what's going on. In your case, you've got very little control of, you can't turn off the line syncing. You can adjust the sweep speed, but you don't have independent, you can adjust the sweep width, but you don't have independent control of resolution bandwidth. So you're getting a weird mixture of frequency domain and time domain responses on that analyzer. I think you do own another spectrum analyzer that has complete freedom. Isn't that true, Joe? And you could therefore do some of these other experiments. Or, yes, W-A-2-R-Y-Y, T-2-R-I-W.
Well, that is, yes, well, that is not in functioning mode at this moment, so I really can't use that. I haven't used it in a long time. I went to turn it on a couple of weeks ago to use it to do the same exact thing you're talking about, and it won't. The local oscillator doesn't seem to be running in the unit, so something happened internally. Don't know what. It was stored, in its protective case, had it in, you know, one particular room in the house. Don't know what happened to it. It doesn't come on, so I don't know. Anyway, so I guess I'll just drop that for now. This is just an observation. But I do have another comment on the, this is reference to the talk last week about the smart meters. I went back in my house, let's reset. Went back in my house with a piece of paper and copied the name off the meter, the smart meter. Mine is made by Lantis and it says Landis plus GYR. And I found them on the web, LandisGYR.com, and you can find a whole bunch of information on it. One thing they said, one of the papers related to its specifications was RF exposure. I think the RF radiation exposure is only 20 centimeters, as the FCC recommends. But they also listed specific power, frequency bands, and receiver sensitivity. Would you like to know what those are?
Sure would, Joe. Fire away.
All this stuff falls... All this stuff falls into Part 15 Class B digital devices, all right? They have two different models. One is called Gridstream Radio General, and another one is called Gridstream, and Gridstream, it's got another different like type focus it has for a model. Mine is an RXR dish. Looks like SD or 5D. Anyway, let's see here. One operates at 902.2 to 927.9, output 25.25 kbm, I guess it's kilobits per minute, kilobits per megasecond, something like that, kbm, that's the radio, as it said, 26.25 dBm typical, 27.25 dBm maximum over temperature range with less than a VSWR of 2 to 1 at 10% PER. Okay, let me reset for the next information. Oh, let me finish. It said about the antenna. Antenna, inverted F, printed, that's all he said. Antenna gain, plus 3 dBi peak gain. Now I'll reset and I'll give you the information for the other band. Okay, interesting. The other one, on the other band is 2.405 to 2.475. I believe that's what it says here. 75 or 95, I thought he wrote down 95, well, 75, whatever. That one says Zigbee Radio General. What else? 17 dBm minimum, this is the RF output, 20 dBm typical, 21 dBm maximum, with a less than 2 to 1 VSWR load. Receiver sensitivity on the 900 meg one, this probably really doesn't make any difference. 900 meg one was minus 112 dBm minimum. I guess that's worst case. Minus 112 dBm minimum. And minus... Okay, 102 would be the worst case. It has to be at least that or better. The 2.405 to 2.475, 70 dBm minimum, 20 dBm typical, 21 maximum, minus 106 minimum for RX sensitivity, minus 104.5 typical, minus 102.0 dBm max at 1% PER. And again, this one said inverted F printed and antenna gain plus 5 dBi, comma, was I getting noisy at the end of that transmission?
You sure were. Each of those transmissions, it sounds like your transmitter is dropping off in power as it heats up, Joe. Go ahead.
It could be. It's a max track. It could be the reducing power. Did you get most of that information? So one meter operates at 902.2 to 927.9, and the other one operates 5 to 2.475 gig, and that one has an output of 70. A typical 21 dBm maximum. And that one's got also an inverted F printed for the antenna. Plus 5 dBi peak gain. Meg 1 was plus 3 dBi peak gain. Have you ever heard of an inverted F comma printed antenna? What Is that something to do with the antenna on a being constructed on a circuit board?
Yes, Joe. An inverted F is one of the very popular antennas on printed circuit board. Usually consists of a large portion of the board covered with copper, acting as the ground plane, and coming off that ground plane, quite often at right angles, or not quite at right angles, but at a crazy angle, coming off from that ground plane, in the same plane of the printed circuit board, is what you and I would call a monopole-like antenna, where the top of it is, the top one-third of it is bent over at a 90-degree angle, and the portion of the F that you cross in the middle, so to speak, that is the leading, that is where the power is fed into it. So you feed into the middle of the F from the transmitter. The bottom end is grounded to the great big chunk of copper of the printed circuit board, and the rest of it sticks up and has a bend on the end of it. It's really a bent monopole fed at a point, let's say, 20% above ground, the point which matches nearly to 50 ohms. Being a monopole-like antenna, its gain is very close to isotropic, plus 1, plus 2, plus 3 dBm over isotropic in the peak of the beam. So it's a fairly normal antenna, fairly popular. You could Google the word inverted F antenna. You'd see lots of pictures of it. So among printed circuit boards, it's a popular antenna. And so 900 megs or around 2 gigs is where these smart meters are working. Let me drop. Plus 17 dBm is around 50 milliwatts. Plus 20 dBm is 100 milliwatts. Plus 21 is probably 130 milliwatts, some number like that. So we know that this is putting out a burst of energy of in the vicinity of 100 milliwatts for the burst of energy going into an antenna that's only a couple of dB away from isotropic. So we know, therefore, that during the transmission, the effect of isotropic radiated power is not very far away from 100 milliwatts or so. That's not much power. And because radio frequency biohazard has to be integrated over a 6-minute period, and this thing is probably making bursts of transmission of data that lasts for fractions of a second, you could mount your eye a couple of inches away from that thing when it's transmitting, and believe it or not, you'd be safe. Over to you, Joe, the B2RYY, K2RYW, and the SecNet.
Well, I agree with you, and I thought these things were probably 100 milliwatts, give or take, somewhere around that power level. So it's 100 milliwatts, give or take, on 2.4 to 2.5 gig, and it's a little higher power, maybe plus 27 dBm on 900 to 928, or whatever. So, but still, the overall picture of these things, they're not emitting a lot of energy at all, and it's a very brief burst of energy. So for somebody to make a statement that you have to be 40 feet away from this thing and linearly away from the thing, I don't know where they got that information from at all. And I probably don't think you do either.
Now, that number is a rabbit hat trick. Somebody pulled that number out of the air. Very similar when it comes to the safe distance away from a cell phone base station. There are a number of ordinances written saying that you can't mount a base station within 500 feet of a school, a place of worship, private residences, whatever. Where does the 500 feet come from? Pure rabbit hat trick. The real number is 5 feet. You could be 5 feet in front of a base station for a cell phone system on top of a hook and ladder from the fire department. Say the antenna is 100 feet above the ground. You're on the ladder 100 feet above the ground, and you're standing 5 feet in front of that antenna, and you're doing it during rush hour, you know, 5 o'clock at night when everyone's calling on their cell phone. So there's a whole lot of cell phone signals coming out of that antenna at that time. At 5 feet, you're safe by the American National Standard Institute standard for the United States, and it tracks pretty much the exact same standards for Europe and Australia and Japan and so on. So 5 feet is a safe distance. How in the world did they come up with 500 feet? No one knows. There's no traceability to that. But yet a number of zoning boards are using that as a number, and how are the zoning boards getting that number? They found a zoning board in some community, somewhere in the United States, that used 500 feet, and so therefore they copied it. So it's a number passed on based on nothing. So radio frequency biohazard is highly misunderstood. Back to you for any comments on all of the above, Joe. So there's 40 feet from your smart meter on the house. It's crazy. You could sit directly in front of that forever, and you would not have any deleterious effects. You could make all kinds of measurements. And for it to have the danger that those crazy articles are saying on the internet, to have that much danger, and bypass the American National Standards Institute, the FCC, NIOSH, OSHA, to bypass all of those standards of all those organizations, and be distributed around the United States like they are, that would really be crazy. Boy, that would, if that really had happened, it'd be on the front cover of the New York Times. The PQRYY, KQRIW.
I did see something also within the same paperwork as you scroll down. It's like a PDF. And they had illustrations of an antenna that straps around the glass. The antenna or the pickup on the bottom of the glass, and had a coax cable and then mail on the cable. That must be going to something else. They call that end of line installation. So apparently these grid stream RF meters talk to one another. But if you had an installation where you're the last house on the block, it's like a long street, there's nothing horizontally on either street alongside you or the other side of the woods or whatever the case may be, something was out of range, they probably put one of these things on your meter to make sure it could talk to the other meters up the block the other way. But that's all I saw as far as these things, as far as specification. So, that's who makes the meter, LandisGYR.com. So anybody listening can go to that website, www.LandisGYR.com, and read all about these smart meters.
Now, when it comes to your radio that you used at around 53 megahertz, and as you started tooling along with that radio in your automobile, listening to the spikes coming out of the source, because your radio was tuned to 53 megs, obviously that's the frequency you're listening to, even though the signal was spikes of energy, the answer would be pretty much the same if it was putting out key down energy at 53 megs. At 53 megs, as you traveled along with ground reflection and reflection off other objects in the environment, you would see a picket fence phenomenon, peaks and valleys of the signal. So therefore, even though the signal itself was extremely broadband, each of its spikes is putting out energy between 0 and 100 gigs, or I mean, it'd be 0 and 1 gig. Each individual spike briefly is putting out energy across that spectrum. You only listen to the spikes at around 53 megs, and therefore, you see all of the ripple of 53 megs as if it was a CW signal. Does that make some sense, Joe? To be 2RYY, K2RIW.
I think a little bit. Well, no, the radio wasn't in my car. No, I have a portable radio made by Radio Shack. I don't recall the exact model number of the thing. I bought it many, many years ago. It's a Trunk Tracker 2. I used it for, at the time, listening to local police calls on 800 megahertz, but of course it doesn't work anymore because it's, they downbanded their stuff. Anyway, the K-Philly's radio tunes a lot of different frequency bands, and the neat thing about it is on any frequency you enter in, since it covers AM for aircraft, also on any frequency you could put in, you can flip the dial on the front to go from mode. AM, FM, trunking Motorola, or trunking GE. So I could flip the thing from FM to AM and actually listen to the noise impulses on this radio. And it also has a front button that is for D, for, for A, for attenuator. And I have checked it on a signal center, and it attenuates about 20 decibels coming in the antenna jack. So it's a good portable sniffer for being able to look at different stuff at different frequencies.
So you're holding the sniffer. It's kind of a handy talkie, if I understand correctly. You were tuned around 53 megs, and you saw these ripples as you moved along. Is that true?
It's a handheld scanner, and I have the thing horizontal. Because I'm looking, holding it in front of me, looking at it, it's horizontally held, so I can look at the display and just listen to it audibly as I was walking down the sidewalk along a length of road about a quarter mile away from my house, which I believe where the noise was coming from. And I pretty much heard this noise in fairly high intensity along underneath some of these different power lines. I don't know if they're 13 kV or higher. Some of them look like they're probably 37 kV. More overhead wiring. Where it's specifically coming from, I don't know. But the radio's handy in that function, being able to, it has portability to it.
Now, since the wires that are emanating the signal, the power line, are horizontal, it does make sense that the signal would be primarily horizontally polarized. So when you held that scanner horizontal, you got a stronger signal than when you held it vertical. My guess is there still was plenty of signal there at vertical. Wasn't that true, Joe?
Yes. I also noticed that sometimes I could take it and actually rotate on the sidewalk 180 degrees, and I could actually get it, the radio not pointed at something, and the noise would completely go away. So I'm not sure exactly what that's indicating, if the antenna is picking up broadside like a horizontally polarized dipole, and when I put the end of the pointed rubber antenna towards the source, it minimized and went away. Maybe that's actually what it was doing.
Yeah, a monopole antenna does have a null off of the tip. In other words, if the monopole on your handy-talkie is parallel to the ground, aimed at the source, so the rubber tip is aimed directly at the source, you'll have a null in the antenna pattern in that direction. Also, if you rotated your body 180 degrees or holding onto this thing, in certain directions, your body is acting as an attenuator, and it'll make the signal weaker. So that null is somewhat explainable. And so you were able to pin down a particular telephone pole, so to speak, where the noise was the loudest. Joe, is that true? K2RIW?
Within about one or two poles, maybe three poles. It seemed to be fairly constant along two or three poles. But as I got near one of them, I actually heard a background noise of arcing. The rest of the noise was like a typical 60 or 120 hertz buzz type of line noise that I was picking up. And that seemed to look matched what I had on my spectrum analyzer at the house, and then demodulated it in the AM mode of the service monitor. It sort of sounded like that, like a 60, like 120. In fact, it does look like a 120 hertz buzz. If you use a Lissajou pattern, try to compare it to an internal tone generator. And I heard the same thing as I was walking with the radio on the sidewalk near these three or four poles. But as I got between like two poles, I heard this other racket like underneath it, almost like I was getting near high current arcing, because I didn't pick it up all the time. It was like buried underneath the line noise. So I guess I got a couple problems going on. I communicated with PSEG, and they said they did a sweep of the area, and they turned it over to another department for investigation, so I'm not sure what that actually means.
When you were walking around, it would be interesting to turn off the radio, or at least lower the audio, and by your hearing, did you hear any arcing with your hearing, Joe? Go ahead.
No, and I never have. I never have. And I did talk to the two guys that originally came out for the first complaint, and they did have a ultrasonic ear with them. Because they said, and I think CDL told me the same thing. You need to listen to stuff in an ultrasonic mode, because the arcing is out of the hearing range normally, unless it's very, very severe. But you can hear it with an ultrasonic ear.
And that ultrasonic ear probably consists of a small parabolic dish with a microphone in it that's got ultrasonic response. I think that's what those things look like. And there was an article in QST Magazine, how to build one of those for finding arcing. You may remember that article a couple of years ago, Joe. Go ahead.
No, I wouldn't, because I don't get QST. I never did.
Take my word for it. There is a QST article about how to build an ultrasonic acoustic arc detector for finding the exact telephone pole and the exact insulator, so to speak, that's giving you the problem. the parabolic dish is something like a foot or a foot and a half in diameter with an ultrasonic microphone mounted at the focal point. And that thing has a few degrees of acoustic bandwidth, horizontal and vertical. I said bandwidth, I meant beam width. The acoustic beam width of that thing, you can aim it very precisely and find the exact insulator that's giving you the noise. That's exactly what it was intended. It's a fairly easy to construct thing for really pinning down exactly which telephone number, serial number, so you can report to your power company which one's giving the grief. Anything else you want to discuss tonight before we go on to the next person, Joe? W-A-2-R-Y-Y, T-2-R-I-W.
Well, sure, right along the same subject, because you mentioned it and I didn't. Why does the arcing seem to be primarily ultrasonic and not within the audible hearing range? What causes that phenomena?
Okay. Sound travels at, 1090 feet per second. So in 1 second, the sound travels a little over 1,000 feet. A 1 KC note would have a acoustic bandwidth of a beam bandwidth of around a foot. Yeah, around a foot. The actual emitter, the arc itself, is probably a couple of inches long. A couple of inches as a resonant bandwidth at acoustic frequencies would be well above 10 kilohertz. So. 1 inch, a 10 kilohertz signal in air has a wavelength of around an inch. And the arc itself is a very small fraction of an inch in some cases. So you can see how it's going to favor higher frequencies. So because of the length of the arc itself that's doing the emitting, being an inch or even shorter long, it's going to favor ultrasonic frequencies. The B2RYY, K2RIW.
Okay. Is ultrasonic receiving equipment available that's able to tune, like you tune a shortwave receiver to say, okay, set this thing to respond from, say, 25 kilohertz going on up to maybe 100 kilohertz, 200 kilohertz, 300 kilohertz? Do they make such a device?
It's called a Hewlett-Packard 3561. I can't think of the name of the darn thing right now. But it's a device that they usually connect to an accelerometer, among other things. It goes from 0 to 100 KC, and you can set it for various scan widths and various resolution bandwidths. It is a ubiquitous analyzer. It gulps down the whole darn signal and does digital signal processing on it. All of a sudden, I can't think of the name of the answer. But Hewlett-Packard 3561 is an instrument where you could set the screen as if it was a spectrum analyzer. But if the pickup happens to be acoustic, then the signal being displayed is acoustic. These ultrasonic detecting devices used for finding arcs, they usually put a broadband ultrasonic microphone at the focal point. That goes into an amplifier, into a detector, and the detector gives you spikes of noise coming out of a loudspeaker. And so it's usually used in the broadband manner, Joe. In other words, the actual microphone may be picking up everything from 2 KC to 100 KC, and any energy in that frequency region picked up by the mic is amplified, rectified, and put into an audio amplifier out of a loudspeaker, and you hear it. And also rectified and integrated and put into a meter so you can measure a specific amplitude, if you know what I mean. Dynamic signal analyzer, I think that's what it's called. Dynamic signal analyzer, Hewlett-Packard 3561. Over to you, Joe, K2RIW. Do a web search on that. You'll find that's a very fancy machine. It's an oldie but goodie, built by Hewlett-Packard in the late 80s, early 90s, and it's still very popular among certain people that do certain kinds of testing. So K2RYY, K2RIW.
So the thing works like an old crystal radio receiver that deaf is a postal, so you get something on top of a transmitter, but they're pretty much broadband and there's a lot of energy coming through. Okay, I got the idea.
When it comes to the arc detector, yes. When it comes to this 3561, no. It is a very fast digital recorder which takes a signal and breaks it up nanosecond at a time, so to speak, with digital signal processing, and figures out what frequencies are present with what amplitude and displays them on the screen. You can see the screen build up the signal at all the individual frequencies. There's a whole bunch of fingers that grow on the screen as you aim it at a particular, as you plug in a certain kind of a noisy signal, and it tells you how much amplitude is at 1 kc, 10 kc, 30 kc, 48 kc, and so on. So those specific amplitudes will slowly build up on the screen with this digital signal analyzer. Very, very fancy machine. W2RYY for any other comments. K2RYW in the TechNet. Do look up Hewlett Packard 3561. You read that thing, you're going to say, gee, if I can find one of those at the right price on a flea market, I'd like to own one of those. You got it, Joe.
Nope, I have no more questions on this subject or anything else for the current time, so I'm just going to be listening out. Thank you very much for entertaining the subject.
Later, dude. Mike, you're next. Kilo Delta 2, Alpha Mike Zulu, K2RIW. You got a mic.
Yeah, okay, thank you there, Dick. I figure I'll be some filler in tonight. This is slow. Well, I'm currently, my new job is working over at the VA hospital in Northport. And one of the projects that I'm involved with is the construction, what they call the special procedure suite, which is houses some very fancy X-ray equipment. And it's a brand new suite. And obviously the room is well shielded, including the control room and power supply room, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I decided to take a look at the room and how the operation of the hospital, and they have these things, COWs, which are computer on wheels. Let me let it reset.
COW normally stands for cell on wheels, cell phone on wheels. Go ahead.
No, not in a hospital. It's a cow. Moo, moo, moo. Anyways. They refer to cows. They're basically a computer on wheel, which also monitors the patient, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this cow, or computer on wheels, communicates via Wi-Fi, which also makes sense, and they have Wi-Fi AP sites all over the place. Anyways, in this suite, there are no APs. The nearest AP is in a hallway, or maybe 50 feet away, and they're supposed to have put in APs in an abandoned construction site, which is also about 50 feet away. The room is shielded. The cow will not receive any Wi-Fi signals. The computer IT people say, oh, you don't need one in there. Well, a ham radio operator knows you want to get a radio signal into a shielded room. You better put an AP in that room. Let me do that drop.
By the way, tell us what AP stands for.
Access point.
Roger.
So, I looked at it, and there's an app that's on a cell phone, which you can use to measure Wi-Fi signals, and it's kind of like a spectrum analyzer, but, it, you know, crude, but it works. It gives you a reasonable idea. Inside the room, with the doors open, I'm getting a very weak signal. I close the door, the signal drops off to zero, which is exactly what it's supposed to do. I had a chat with the chief radiology, chief of radiology. He says, of course we need one, and now they're going to a fight to have one installed there because it wasn't part of the plan. So, again, being a ham, this is where it comes in handy. We realize we could just look at things and say, of course this thing's not going to work in there. And the point I want to try to get is something we see is normal, it's so obvious to certain people, it makes absolutely no sense. I don't know if I'm making any sense right now, Dick. Back to you.
First of all, why is the room a screen room, a shielded room, Mike? Go ahead.
It's, in essence, an X-ray machine in there, a very high-powered, kind of like a CT scanner, which does, you know, sectional reviews. They use this for operation live, so they can see inside a patient. This is very high power X-ray, very high power supplies, obviously. So, and you want everything shielded in that room.
Okay. shielded as a radio shield or as a X-ray shield? Are you telling me the walls are intended to be a shield for X-rays? Go ahead.
Exactly. It's a shield for X-rays, shield for RF, because, well, X-rays is really a form of RF. So they're lead walls and they're steel walls. Yeah, they're using leaded glass. Everything is grounded. It's basically a big Faraday cage.
And in there is a high-power X-ray machine. Is there also an operating table so they can get a live display of what they're doing? Go ahead.
Yes, there is. It's hardwired. It's not, it's not an RF, but yes, there are displays in the room, in the actual procedure room, in the actual control room. There are displays.
If a patient is on an operating table above an X-ray machine, is the physician located at that position? What's protecting the physician against X-rays? Go ahead.
I can't answer that question because I haven't seen it in operation yet, but looking at the table, it looks like that there'll be a patient there, and there is a large monitor screen. I can't answer that question because I have not seen this machine in operation yet. I probably will in a couple of months.
K2RLW.
K2RLW, Romeo Lima Whiskey, I guess. Start off with your name and give us your information, sir.
Right, Panhandle is Bob, Baker Ocean, Baker. And in my experience in those situations, I went as an observer and had to wear a gigantic lead vest and sheet coating over myself, and the physician did that too. Thank you.
And what are we talking about here? A procedure like a the installation of a stent, something like that? A catheterization procedure, is that what we're talking about, Bob?
Well, actually, in fact, it was a heart operation where the defibrillator was being inserted in a heart, but it was using X-rays so the physician could know where he's putting what. Go ahead.
Now, what's your connection with these operations, Bob? Are you a physician that was actually doing this, or are you a technical person maintaining the equipment? What's your connection with this, Bob? Go ahead.
Okay, well, my connection is that I was a high school physics teacher who taught four of the heart surgeon's children, and he wanted me to come along and see how it was all done.
Fascinating, Bob. And what the... In what hospital did this take place?
It took place at what is now Hackensack Medical Center in Hackensack. Go ahead.
Thank you, Bob. Good information. Back to you, Mike. KD2AMZ, K2RIW.
Okay, thank you there. Appreciate the additional information. Again, the reason why I say there's a huge, 50-inch monitor hanging off the gantries in that room. So that's why I'm assuming that there are people in the room with the patient while it's going. Again, I assume. I don't know. I am going to find out probably in a few months. But the point of what I'm trying to get at is they have these computer on wheels or cows. And speaking with the chief of radiology, when the patient is undergoing a procedure, the cow is in the room with the patient. And they're wired, the nurses are doing stuff. The chief asked me to go into a CT scanner with her, and they were people in the room while the CT scanner was going, and the cow was communicating. But the point of what I'm trying to get at, the whole point of this thing, people don't realize that, Wi-Fi is nothing but radio. If the room is shielded, you're not going to get any kind of communication, and these cows will be completely useless. And because of some kind of bureaucracy, they don't want to install one in that room as they have in all the other procedures. So I did bring it to the chief cardiologist's attention, and chief cardiologist says, I will take care of it. So the advantage of being a ham, you can kind of spot these things in the field.
I presume if the cow had a big enough disk drive, it could record the data of what's going on during the procedure and play it back at a later time. I presume what you're saying, though, is by way of the access point that they wish was there. They wanted the cow to talk to an access point, and therefore there would be a live display outside of the room. Is that what they desired there, Joe? Go ahead. I mean, Mike, go ahead.
I'm assuming that because they are sending live data to some kind of central point via the Wi-Fi system which we have in the hospital, which is, they tell me, is a secure system. Again, I don't know the pure architecture of it, but they make a big deal about it. And like I said, it's a shielded room. The shielding works amazingly well, because I know there's an access point just outside the room, and the door is closed. You cannot pick up RF in there. Your cell phone won't work in that room. It's like a dead room. But only after you close the doors, obviously.
Is it a real screen room where there's a whole bunch of finger stock around the perimeter of the door and the door is metallic? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's sort of like that. I can't tell if it was a metallic. Like in government installation, yeah, you do have the fingers when you have an iron room for ultra security, for EMP. But I don't think they're anticipating a 20 megaton blast. They are door seals. I don't think they're quite as severe as you would have, let's say, in a Pentagon or in a SCIF-type room. SCIF is a type of secure room which is designed to withstand, an EMP blast. But I just thought it was interesting, and they're going to do it eventually, but I just thought it'd be interesting to bring up to the net. You needed topics.
Is this a screen room and its installation brand new, or is it something that's been in use for a long time? Over to you, Mike.
Brand spanking new. I think we're going to have it commissioned and operational within a month.
Now, when it comes to security, what kind of security are you talking about? Hacking? And I'm still curious as to why, if there are human beings in that room during a procedure, I guess they're wearing protective clothing, but because of the inverse square law, anything more than 10, 20, or 100 feet away from that procedure is getting a very small amount of radiation. Did it really have to be a X-ray and RF screen room around that procedure? Over to you, Mike, K2RIW.
Well, what about the same rule we have about smart meters? That's federal hospital medical standards that the rooms where there's X-ray machines or radiation-producing devices has to be shielded. Whether it's for real or not, those are the rules and those are the laws.
It sounds like some of the physics here is only partially understood. And they wanted the cow to talk to an access point, but they placed no access point into the screen room. That certainly does sound like a mutually exclusive situation, doesn't it, Mike?
Dick, that's exactly my point. And again, I made it a point to try and bring it up to the appropriate people. And the people who are supposed to put the access points in, it's not on the plan. They tell me that room doesn't even exist. I said, oh, that's a good one. Considering I was in it, half hour beforehand. And like I said, the chief radiologist absolutely insisted there must be one in there.
Question to that.
You said the room doesn't exist. They were keeping the presence of the room secret? Is that what you're saying, Mike?
No, not at all. There are certain individuals who choose to remain blind. They're just like, oh, if it's not on my drawings, then I don't know about it.
Well, are they saying it's not my job?
It's not my job, man.
N2XJN, go ahead, Wes.
Is the computer that is moving the cow is connected to the wall with one wire which is powering his always battery operated, because along with that you can put a regular CAT 6 go through the wall, and from the other side you can install access point easy like that. Also, another thing is I have professional Lindgren RF enclosure, which is the Faraday cage. It depends on the frequency. It is reacting as a Faraday cage, and it's not. So I can put my cell phone there, and still the telephone, even though that I have fingers around the door and everything is done the way that it's supposed to be, supposedly much better than in the hospital, I can still have that phone working. into Axia.
I'll answer that, Wes.
In a real screen room, the power comes through so-called dirty box, in other words, a box that bypasses all the RF energy that's on any of the wiring for power going into the room, so you can't easily get power through through that wall, so to speak. Isn't that true, Mike? Over to you, Mike.
Exactly right. Now, power in a real military shielded room, all power is put through filters. There is not directly wired, but this is not. But and to answer your question, the cows are battery operated. They are not plugged into the wall. But again, the point is, I'm going to get one in there because I have to do the wiring for it. And you know, and these people just can't understand why this thing won't work in there. You know, without the AP in the room.
It would be fun to attempt to operate your cell phone in that room. Did you ever try that, Mike? My guess is you would get no bars anywhere. Is that true?
Exactly true. In the radiology department, we are actually in the process of installing T-Mobile repeaters. Oh, God, I forgot the name of the cable. We were just talking about it. You cannot get in the radiology department, which is in a different area of the hospital. There is absolutely no cell phone service in there, so that's why we're putting the T-Mobile repeaters in. Oh, my God, I forgot the name of the coax, the lossy coax.
You're talking about Radiax? You're saying Radiax cables are about to be installed to irrigate that that building with cell phone energy? Is that true? Go ahead.
Yes, whether they're using Radiax or they're using, you know, like Wi-Fi access points. Now, that's not my project. I don't know about these details. Actually, I did ask the engineer who's involved, hey, listen, when the T-Mobile people come in, I really would like to talk to them. But it could be a Radiax, or it could be like access points type situation. I don't know what they're putting in, but I know that's going in very shortly because we get zero cell phone service in the radiology area.
Are there places in the building where a cell phone does work? Well, let me think now. In Northport, I think the number of local cell sites is very small in Northport, so therefore, on most of your services, I'm guessing as you walk around the building with a cell phone, you don't get very good coverage. Is that true?
Actually, that's a negative on that. We have a water tower with AT&T cell site. It happens to be an AT&T site, which means T-Mobile can use it. And you're maybe within, I don't know, 400 or 500 feet of a the cell site, which is right smack in the middle of the Northport VA campus.
Okay. If there's that cell site that's nearby, why does the radiology area have such pure cell phone coverage? Is that because it's deep inside of this building? Mike, go ahead.
Negative. The radiology area has no coverage. But you go one floor up, you know, you walk outside of the radiology area, and your cell phones come right back to life.
Is the radiology area below grade in the basement? Is that why the coverage is so poor?
It's kind of like a half basement thing. But again, the second you step outside of the radiology area, you're getting like 4 bars, 3 bars. You're getting very reasonable signal strength. Again, it's shielded, and that's why we're going through a complete project of putting in the Radiax down there.
That installation is taking place right now?
Oh, repeat, please.
Are you saying that installation of Radiax is taking place as we speak?
Not yet, but it's going to be happening very, very shortly. We have a few other technical difficulties we have to overcome. Basically, what they want to do is they have to set up a comm closet. They want to put in a repeater system in there, and now we have to worry about putting in the air conditioning system into that room to keep the repeater happy because, well, they do give off heat.
Okay, what is your connection with all of this? Your title, your function is what, Mike, and what are you doing? If you want to tell us.
Sure. I'm a general engineer. Each general engineer is assigned his own particular projects. I have various alarm projects. I have all kinds of projects that I'm in charge of. same thing with the other engineers. One of the other engineers happens to be doing the T-Mobile project, which is, and I know everything about it because we talk all the time together.